chapter 4, text 11. It's a well-known verse. You can chant after me. Ye yatamang prapadyante. Tangs tathaiva bhajamyaham. Mama vartmanu vartante. Manusha partha sarvashaha. Translation. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. Purport. Everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahma-jyoti effulgence. And as the all-pervading Supersoul, dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone is satisfied according to one's desires to have him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as Supreme Master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshippers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to become or want to commit sinful spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal conscience, return to this material world to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. They are not admitted into the spiritual platform, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Yageshwara, and those who act in yoga,
Some of them who are not
firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. They are not admitted into the spiritual planets, but they are given a chance again to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Yageshwaras. And those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone. And all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10. Akama sarvakamo va moksha kama udaradhihi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purushang param. Whether one is without desire, the condition of the devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection culminating in Krishna consciousness. Yayata mam prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajamyaham mamavatmanuvartante manushyaf partha sarvashaha. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. So, upon reading this, or hearing this, or the verse that Srila Prabhupada quotes near the end of the purport, Akama Sarva Kamova, we might think that, well, just do whatever you like. Whatever you do, you're on Krishna's path. You can be with desire, without desire, desire liberation. Tivraina Bhakti Yoga, it's recommended you to Tivra Bhakti Yoga, intense Bhakti Yoga, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But anyway, whatever you do, we're all in God. So, what does it matter? Well, as Srila Prabhupada points out in this purport, the point that Krishna is making here isn't, he's not saying that you do whatever you like, but that we should recognize Krishna. We find in the 12th chapter of the Gita that Krishna says, you just fix your mind on me. If you can't do that, follow the principles of Bhakti Yoga. And he goes down, 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 work for me. But it's always with Krishna in the center, and then we get lower and lower and lower. The point is Krishna. Krishna's talking about himself. Yayata mang prapadyan. As they surrender to me. Now, it seems to be a very broad scope. So there is very broad scope. As Krishna says in the 12th chapter, that you, if you can't do this, you do that. If you can't do that, you do something else. If you can't do that, then you can do something else. But ultimately, Krishna says, Sarva dhamman parityajamam ekam sharanam raja. Surrender unto me only. So there are some statements which seem like very liberal. Yes, as you like, you can do. There are other statements. I looked one up here. There are many such statements, such as the one I'm about to read from Bhagavad Gita. It's all writings all over. It's writing on everything. Pencil marks on the book. Makes it difficult to read. Ye tve tad abhyasuyanto nanu tishtanti me matam. Sarva jnana vimurhatma tan vidhi nasht. Tad vidhi nashtan achetasaha. Sarva jnana vimurhang tan vidhi nashtan achetasaha. Those who, Krishna says, out of envy disregard these teachings, the teachings that Krishna has just described, and do not follow them regularly, are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. So it seems that some statements are very broad and wide, inclusive, and some very exclusive. You have to do this. If you don't do this, then you're sarva jnana vimurhang tan. You are one of those who is bereft of all knowledge and vidhi nashtana chetasa. They should be known to be, they're spoiled, they're completely rejected. Now, proponents of Hinduism, I'm not one of them. I didn't become a Hindu. Sometimes people ask me, when did you become a Hindu? And I answer that, well, I didn't. They think, well, I didn't become a Hindu, I was born a Hindu. But you became a Hindu, converted Hindu. But proponents of Hinduism often point to its quality in comparison with other religions, is that it's very broad and accommodating, universal. You can do anything or think anything and be a Hindu. Whereas in other religions, there are certain conditions. To be a Christian, you have to believe that Jesus died on the cross to save me. And in Islam, you have to believe, illa wa illa la Muhammadan Rasulallah. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. And that makes you a Muslim. And there are other things too. To be a converted Christian, you have to eat beef in India, just to show that you're a real Christian. But there's no such thing in Hinduism. There's no one thing which can say that you're a Hindu or you're not a Hindu. You can even be an atheist and be a Hindu. You don't have to believe in God. You don't have to believe in anything. You can just say, I'm a Hindu. I'm born in a Hindu family and I go to the temple because my wife likes it. So, okay, I go. I don't believe in all these things, but anyway, it's cultural. So you can be an atheist. There's no concept of apostasy in Hinduism. Apostasy means you give up your religion to accept another religion or to become an atheist. In Islam, if you do that, apparently according to the Quran, you should be killed. But there's nothing to apostatize from because there's nothing fixed to believe in anyway. So you can't stop being a Hindu just by saying, I don't believe in all this. You can still be a Hindu. And there may be many Hindus who identify themselves as Hindus when you have to fill up some government form which says what your religion is on the electoral roll or whatever. Then you may put Hindu, but you don't really have to believe in anything or do anything. So it's very broad. It's often said by scholars of Hinduism, most of whom are in the West, they're sitting in the West and pointing their telescope at Hindus, who are mostly in India, but many of them are in the West also, that in Hinduism there is not a, in contrast with Abrahamic religions, that means Judaism, Christianity and Islam, there's not much emphasis on orthodoxy in understanding, but there's emphasis on orthopraxy. I'll explain that. Just like an orthodox understanding of Christianity is that Jesus is the Son of God. There's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. There are certain things you have to believe to be a Christian. The Nicene Creed. So you have to believe that. And as far as how you practice, that's not so important. But you have to believe that. And in Islam, there's no God but Allah. And saying there's no God but Allah, that immediately brings the concept that there could be another God. Isn't it? Because if there is no God, actually, then where does even the idea of any other God come from? That's a bit of a tangle, a philosophical... it arises out of the origins of Islam in which the inhabitants of Arabia are what nowadays we'd probably call Hindus, worshipping many gods, and there came the idea that there should be one God only. So, not many gods, not polytheism, monotheism. So, Whereas in Hinduism, there are all kinds of different beliefs, so there's no orthodoxy in belief, but there is orthopraxis, which is within the Varnashram system. That means you have to do certain things. As a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, especially as a Brahmana, there are certain things that you have to practice. As a Brahmana, you have to chant Gayatri, you have to do Sandhya Vandanam 3 times a day, otherwise you'll be thrown out. But you don't have to believe in any particular thing. You can be a Vaishnava, a Shaiva, Ganapati, although it does usually go in caste groups also, which is often why in India, when one caste gets converted all at once, because they all have their caste rules, orthopraxy, their strict rules. For instance, in Bengal, throughout most of North India at least, the weaver castes, not here in South India, because we know the weaver caste just in the next village were all Hindus, but they all converted all at once to Islam. So it goes in groups. So they're not so much concerned about what you believe or what kind of worship you do, but they're more concerned. You have to act according to the rules, particularly of your group, your jati, your caste. Of course, not everyone agrees with that. There is a widespread idea that, well, whoever you worship, whatever kind of worship you do, it's all okay. But that idea largely comes from the Mayavad of Shankara, that it doesn't matter what you believe because it's all the same anyway. Whereas, especially the Vaishnavas, they contest this. It does very much. Vishnu is supreme. And it's not a vyavaharic supreme. As if you say to an Advaitavadi, well, Vishnu is supreme, he says, yes, 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 we agree. Yes, Vishnu is supreme among all the gods. If you like to think like that, you can think like that. And actually, according to Shastra, it also says, but you have to understand it's not really true in the ultimate sense. So they'll agree with you with everything, but then at the end there's a qualifier which just undoes everything. So it's really posing as bhakti, but it's really not. I've seen it stated several times that by Western scholars that due to the influence of Vivekananda and others, later Yogananda, and the Upanishads, they were translated into German and different languages with the Mayavad commentaries. So therefore in the West there's the idea that Hinduism, everyone's just an impersonalist. They all believe in the oneness of everything, but many recent scholars have said that, well, if you actually see India, the real culture is bhakti, because everyone's worshipping someone or other, but the two states are not mutually exclusive. People are worshipping someone or other. But in the back of the mind is the idea that, well, it's all the same anyway. And if I like to worship Ganesh, someone else worships Sai Baba, someone else worships both as being the same, especially on Sai Baba worshippers on Ganesh Chaturthi. They make a Ganesh idol, as they call it, with a head of Sai Baba. I've seen in Gujarat. I'm sure it's quite common, probably more so in Maharashtra, which is the capital in India, both of Ganapati worship, thanks to Lokmanya Tilak, It used to be predominantly Vaishnava. And it's also the home state of Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba, the real Sai Baba, not that upstart from Bangalore or near Bangalore. Actually, he's a Telugu wala, but he preferred the climate, I guess, in Bangalore area. So, although worship goes on with much hoo-ha or dhum-dham, as it would be said in Hindi, actually everyone, they don't really believe in any god, that it's all the same. There's no one superior, supreme god. Or even if they say one supreme, they think, well, they're all supreme, but anyway, it doesn't really matter that much. It's up to you, whoever you think is supreme. If you feel happy thinking that so-and-so is supreme, then okay, he's supreme for you, which totally militates against the meaning of the word supreme, which means asamordva, no one is equal to or above. It means in all sarvatra, sarvada, sarvata. That means in all places, times, and circumstances, who is supreme is supreme. That is the meaning of Bhagavan. Not that, well, if you like to think someone's supreme, it's okay for you. But ontologically, that means intrinsically, Krishna is supreme. This is what we want to preach. Oh yeah, if you want to preach that, yeah, yeah, it's all right, you can preach that if you like. But anyway, this killer of bhakti, this idea that all opinions are the same. There was Shankara, and after that there was Ramanuja, after that there was Madhva, and there are Shaivas and Shaktas and Garnapatyas and Shauras and Smartas and Tantrics and so on and so on and so on. And then Ramakrishna, Paramahamsa, he came as the fulfillment of all the different schools of thought and said, Jato Mat Tato Pat, the fulfillment of Hinduism, as many opinions, that many, punch him in the face. Well, as Srila Prabhupada said about Vivekananda, his disciple, who was very different from him in many ways, but he basically the same poison. Srila Prabhupada said in a conversation, that if I had been in power at the time, I would have hanged him about Vivekananda. Or as Vidura recommended to Dhritarashtra when Duryodhana was born, kill him immediately. And Gandhari thought, yeah, it's a good idea, but Dhritarashtra didn't. And the rest is history, Mahabharata. The history of Greater India. Probably Krishna wanted him alive also because he's an agent. We have Shakti Veshavatars, those who come on behalf of Krishna to do something good, and we have Shakti Ves Arohatar, whatever, they come up from hell. There are many in the modern age. People, they come, the avatars come down to pull us up, and they come up to pull us down. So, people like Sai Baba, the wheelchair wala, his anti-leela was his wheelchair leela. So, I made some points here. Yeah, so it's all the same. It's all one. It doesn't matter what you do or what you think, that it's all the same. It's a slogan, it's a jingle. You know what a jingle is? It's the kind of thing that in advertisements or something like, what is that? Coca-Cola, the real thing. That was their motto for many years. So, if you think about it, what does it mean? Well, maybe they're trying to say it's the real cola, It doesn't have any profound, substantial meaning. So say jato mat tato pat. Oh, sounds, may sound very nice, but it doesn't mean anything. It has no connection with reality. One thing we hear often nowadays, equality, we want equality. But what does it mean? How are you going to make everyone equal? Are you going to give them all plastic surgery so their noses looks exactly the same, it's all the same? And then if someone's too short, you pull them up. And if they're too tall, you push them down. Even physically, people are different. Mentally, people are different. And different in practically every way. How are you going to make them equal? What does it mean, equality? So it sounds good, but if you just start to think about what it means, you realize it doesn't really mean anything. It's meaningless. So there's this idea that as Hinduism under attack, so many conversions, so all those people we kicked out previously, we didn't think they're Hindus, like the tribals. They're not Hindus. They're not allowed in our temples. Well, okay, include them also. They're also Hindus now, even though they may have their own tribal kind of religion in worshipping ghosts and spirits and what. Okay, include them. Buddhism, okay, let's include that as Hindus also. Tantrics, who reject the Vedas. The Vamapanta, left-wing tantrics. They pride themselves on rejecting the Vedas. But anyway, just include them all. Inclusive. You have to boost up the number of Hindus somehow or other. But this is a mistake. Those who reject the Vedas, how can they be called Hindus? Lingayats. Well, you know what. Everyone in Karnataka, I guess, knows what a Lingayat is. But they call themselves non-Hindus, and they... Some of them. They reject the Vedas and they say, we're not Hindus, we don't follow the Vedas. So that if you don't follow the Vedas, then how can you be called a... Anyway, this word Hindu in itself is a misnomer, but we're practically forced to use it because everyone else does. So, Vednamanya bodhoito nastik. The Buddhists are rejected from Vedic culture because they don't believe in the Vedas. And they themselves rejected Vedic culture. So it's a mutual rejection. But somehow they're trying to pull them all in and pull tantrics in. And you'll find, again, the scholars from the West, they're trying to say that tantrism is actually very spiritual. Vivekananda also, these kind of... It's all actually very spiritual because the ultimate goal is to become liberated from this world. So their system, of course we're talking broadly here, but the furthest left-wing tantra that you can go and is the panchamaka, where you eat meat and fish, especially cow's meat is best, human flesh. That's also good. And you have mahila, you have sex with a woman who's not your wife. Necrophilia, having sex with dead bodies, that's the real best tantrism. And drinking wine, and all the activities which are against the ideal of Vedic culture are adopted with the idea that you should do all these things and just be, when you have no feeling, you just do it without any feeling, then you're liberated. That's their idea. So it's a strange idea. It's not spiritual. It's deeply in the mode of ignorance. But people who have no idea what actually spiritual means, who never study Bhagavad Gita, they think it's somehow or other spiritual. So all these Buddhist Jains, tantrics, charvakas, in the past. They verbally reject Vedic culture and philosophy, but they were operating within it and they had to adopt much of it. For instance, you'll find in the Buddhist countries where when they talk about going to hell, the hell is presided over by Yamaraj, not by Lucifer. The Christian hell has Lucifer, the fallen angel, as the boss down there. But what we understand from the Puranas and from the Vedas, they're in Shruti. Yamaraj is mentioned famously in the story of Nachiketa. What we find is that they adopt the same cosmology because they don't know anything else. They have some philosophy, but they couldn't imagine any other cosmography other than that which is given in the Vedas. And they have the whole idea of in Buddhism, there are gurus, in Jainism, in Tantrism. So that's all coming from the Vedic culture. There's no such thing in the Abrahamic religions as having a guru. There are priests, but not they don't have the same role as guru in Vedic culture. So Buddhism, according to its own account, arose from Shakya Singh's search for realization of the truth. It wasn't a protest against Hinduism per se. Right? It was he was in the palace and he went out and he saw someone who's sick, someone who's getting born, someone who's old, and someone who's dead. So it started off as this search for truth. It wasn't that it was a protest against Hinduism or against the Vedic order, but it seemed to have become that because he proposed that you get self-realization by your own meditation, and he was against the caste system. So it came to be seen as an attack upon Hinduism, and it was denying the Vedas, nindasi yagya vidher ahaha shruti jatam sadaya hridaya darshitam pashu ghatam keshava dhritta buddha sharira jai jagadisha hare. So it started off with his quest for self-realization, but then he followed the standard process of deep, severe tapasya. And then he gave that up and said, that doesn't work. So he rejected all the standard ways. He rejected everything that was standard. And he attained enlightenment. This is the tale that is told. So he did reject the Vedas from that point. But I didn't translate that. That ninda... Buddha criticized nindasi yagya, the yagya vidhi, the performance of sacrifices that is given in the Vedas. Being very kind upon the animals who at that time were being sacrificed. There was mass, apparently there were slaughterhouses in the name of Vedic yagyas. Just like we find in Islam and Christianity, there are systems for killing the animals. It's supposed to restrict. In Judaism, it's stated that one should not eat the blood of any animal, which means you shouldn't eat any animal. But they have a system of killing the animal and draining all the blood out, and then you eat the meat. So Buddha, out of compassion for the animals, criticized and rejected the Vedas. But it came at a time when people were, so we're told in the historical accounts, that people were fed up with the ritualistic brahmanas who were exploiting the people, and there was no scope for spiritual life for the people in general, so they flocked to it. And he made it a preaching religion also. So in this way, it was seen as a competitor to Hinduism as it spread widely. Because preaching to people to become Buddhists, if they became a Buddhist, they came out of their caste, which means they came out of Hinduism. So it became very popular. So Buddha spoke on the basis of many assumed axioms. He said that we should he gave a path, the Ninefold Path, to act morally. He didn't explain it much. He spoke about nirvana, but he didn't explain it much. All these concepts are borrowed from Vedic culture. But he didn't explain all these things so much, so his subsequent followers were compelled to do so. Similarly, Jesus Christ, he wasn't a philosopher per se. He didn't speak. So later on, several hundred years later, his followers thought, oh, we need some philosophy here. We got to explain it because people bring up all these questions and we got to be able to explain it all. So then they had to make up some philosophy at some point in time, which wasn't taught by Jesus. So in Buddhism also, they had to invent all kinds of philosophical systems. Based on their own speculation, which does show the weakness of all these different religious systems, because they have nothing to refer to except the Buddha's lucubrate or speculations. But in the Vedic culture is based on the Vedas, which gives a vast body of philosophical insights. They may be interpreted differently, but there is something standard to refer to. Whereas in Buddhism and its psychological speculation. So even though there are different schools within the Vedic culture, there is a fixed canon and a fixed method of approach. Now you may say, well, you see, there are so many paths in Hinduism, so you can follow anyone that you like. But they don't say, traditionally in Vedic culture, they don't say, well, they're all the same. They traditionally in Vedic culture, the pundits would argue with each other to establish. There is the understanding that the Vedas do, in all of them, there is the understanding that the Vedas do have a particular message. Sarva Veda Yatpadam Tamam Ananti, as is stated in the Vedas, that all the Vedas speak of one path, one truth. So what is that? Then you'll find the different people arguing, but they to establish what is the actual message of the Vedas. And it's actually very easy if we study Bhagavad Gita. Vedaisya Sarvaraham Eva Vedya, Krishna is the goal of all the Vedas. It's not very difficult to understand unless we don't want to understand it. And then we have to make difficult philosophies to avoid the glaring, obvious fact that Krishna is the goal of all the Vedas, because he says it himself. And he's accepted as the, even by Shankara, he's accepted as the Jagat Guru, Krishna. Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum. And who is that Krishna? It's not some it's not some stylized imaginary Krishna, but it's who is that? Vasudeva Sutangdevam Kamsa Chanaram Madanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum. It's that Krishna who is the son of, it's not some little boy running around in the village called Krishna, or not some Krishna who's imagined to be some product of the impersonal Brahman. but it's Krishna who's the son of Vasudeva, who is the suppressor of Kamsa and Chandra, among others, who is the giver of great delight to Devaki. It is that Krishna who is Jagat Guru, who gives the actual import of the Vedas. That's the meaning of Jagat Guru. They say Jagat Guru Shankaracharya. But he himself says Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. So if you accept Shankara as the Jagat Guru, then you should accept Krishna, because he accepts Krishna as his guru. So, although it may sound very nice, you see, you just, everyone all the same, and it doesn't matter what you believe, let's all be friends, let's all be nice with each other, and it doesn't matter what you believe, the main thing is that you should be nice to each other. That idea is there. And Buddhism is a very nice religion, you see. It should be good and moral and don't believe in God. And just Buddha was the perfect human being. Of course, his family members weren't very pleased that he left home as a young man, abandoning his wife. So someone was unhappy. Abandoning the kingdom which he was supposed to rule. There's always someone who'll object. But although Buddhism may seem to be very good, it is rejected by followers of the Vedas, because Vedna Manya Bodhaita Nastik. They don't accept the Vedas. So they're considered atheists. They don't accept. The axiomatic Vedas. Not because of their philosophy. Actually, Buddhism is rejected primarily not because of its philosophy, but because they don't accept the Vedas. If someone said, well, we accept Vishnu as supreme, but we don't accept the Vedas, that person should be rejected. You can't accept Vishnu as supreme without accepting the Vedas. If you reject the Vedas, then you are rejected. If you say that anyway we like Krishna, but we don't like the Vedas. No way. You can't be accepted as a devotee of Vishnu. One must accept the Vedas. Vedas are non-different from Krishna. You can't worship Krishna in your own way as you desire. So, within Buddhism, I got my I'm speaking of Buddhism here. Speaking about it quite a lot recently. It's become very popular in the West. When people who are spiritually minded in the West, they often look to Buddhism. It's become very influential. Just 2 days ago, Barack Obama, President of the United States of America, theoretically the most powerful person in America, but probably less than 20 in the list in terms of actual power. Who's got money has got power. He doesn't have the money. He met with the Dalai Lama. He's called the Dalai Lama. He's a big man, so he has a the before his name. The Pope. Presumably not because Dalai Lama is supposed to be the secular leader of Tibet, if Tibet wasn't under the boots of the People's Republic of China, but because he's a very prominent person in the world among people who think of themselves as spiritual. Most Buddhists don't follow him. It's only Tibetan Buddhists. So if you go to Sri Lanka, they don't care about Dalai Lama, or Thailand, or Burma. They're not particularly concerned. They have their own spiritual leaders, so to speak. But many people, they have this idea, I'm spiritual but not religious. And they look to Buddhism and Dalai Lama as the leader of them, the leader of those who don't accept any leader. Well, they wouldn't call him a leader, but he's the inspiration. He's most inspirational when he's eating lots of meat every day, maybe. I don't know. It seems hypocritical to be a Buddhist and eat meat, although most Buddhists, or people who call themselves Buddhists, eat meat. And all kinds of meat. So, but that idea that in modern Buddhism is the idea that, well, it's just everything. What is the idea? It's very difficult to say, actually, because there is no fixed idea. That's what it means to be spiritual. People think that it means to be spiritual, is that there's no fixed idea about anything, and you just feel spiritual. And maybe you could say, maybe I'm being unkind. There are people who do have some ideas, but it's basically atheism with a spiritual touch, if that's possible. Agnosticism. They may not even deny that there's God. They say, well, there is God, but anyway, even if there is God, it doesn't matter. Okay, there's God, all right, but so what? That's one form of agnosticism. I want to read something now from the Srila Prabhupada's, from Srila Prabhupada's purport to Gita, chapter 2, text 7. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, the perplexed man is described as follows. Yuva etad aksharam gagya vid it vasma lokat praiti sakripanaha. Srila Prabhupada's translation. He is a miserly man, kripana, who does not solve the problems of life as a human and who quits this world like the cats and dogs without understanding the science of self-realization. That translation is with Srila Prabhupada's added purport. A closer literal translation would be that the person who in this situation, human life, quits this world without knowing the akshara, which means the supreme, that which is akshara means that which encompasses everything, that from a to ksha, the letters of the alphabet. Such a person is a miser. They've wasted their human form of life. Srila Prabhupada continues in his purport, the human form of life is a most valuable asset for the living entity who can utilize it for solving the problems of life. Therefore, one who does not utilize this opportunity properly is a miser. On the other hand, there is the brahmana, or he who is intelligent enough to utilize this body to solve all the problems of life. Ya etad aksharam gagi vidit vasmal lokat praiti sa brahmanaha. So the opposite of the kripana, one who does utilize this human life to understand akshara, which akshara, it's a synonym for Brahman, the supreme. So, well, Buddhism has a very similar concept, that human life is attained after. There's this story which comes in Buddhism that the human life is attained. It's very rare. It's just like there is a turtle in the depths of the ocean, and once in every day of Brahma, it comes up for air and sticks its head above the water for air. And in the ocean, there is a piece of wood floating with a hole in it, just the size that the turtle can fit his head in. So the chances of getting the human form of life are like the chance that the turtle sticks its head up and it puts its head through the hole in the piece of wood, which is floating in the vast ocean. In other words, it's very rare. So, yeah, in Buddhism there are many stories and analogies and all kinds of things. So that's one of them. So they would agree, this human life should be utilized for this, attaining nirvana, for attaining enlightenment. Although they wouldn't agree to the use of the word brahmana, because brahmana means ones who knows Brahman, and they don't accept the concept of Brahman. And also brahmana, brahmana means within the four varnas, so that they also don't accept. But the principle they accept is that human life should be utilized for spiritual realization. One who does not do so is wasting their life there. So note the condemnatory tone here in this quote from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It's not that, well, whatever you do is okay. That's definitely not the message of Bhagavad Gita. There is, if you can't do this, do that. If you can't do something else, do something else. But at the same time, Krishna gives very strong statements. Yova etad, what is that? Yova, I'm reading this verse. Yov tve etad anasuyanto. I just read the verse. Nanutishanti manava. That one who doesn't follow this. Sarva gyana vimudangs tan vidhi nashtana chetasa. So Krishna said, if you don't follow this, then your life is spoiled. you're spoiled. So you have to use the human life properly. It's not just, well, do whatever you like and you'll get another chance in the next life. That the turtle putting his hole through the piece of wood, that's maybe to get people a little serious about attaining enlightenment. Because, Christians in India, when they were trying to preach in the 18th and 19th century, they say, well, you can't get people serious about, if you don't follow Jesus, you'll go to hell. And they think, well, maybe. But anyway, next lifetime I could follow Jesus. They're not very serious. And they say, Jesus came to save your sins. Well, we can bathe in the Ganga, we get free from all sins. That idea that we have to, you have to believe in Jesus, otherwise you go to hell forever. It's a frightening message. It's a compelling message. Whereas in Hinduism, there's always another chance. If you blow it this time, there's another chance, which is true. But Shastra is also urging, use this human form of life. Don't waste it. Rideham adyams, there's the lab first one. Ladva sudurlabamidang vahusambhavanti manusham artadam anityam apihadhiratir turnam yatetanapatedanamritya yava nisrayasya vishakam sarvatasya. Having got this human form of life, after many, many births, a sober person considers that even though it is temporary, it's very valuable, and therefore he does whatever is required to not get born again, knowing that sense gratification is available in every species of life. And then there's a similar message, but more forceful, again spoken by Krishna in the same Uddhava Gita, that Nrideham Adyang Sulabang Sudur. Nrideham. I'm getting mixed up with the. It is. Nrideham adyang sulabang sudurlabam plavan sukalpo guru karanaram mayanukulena namasvateritam puman bhavabdim nataret saatmaha. Krishna says that having attained this human form of life, it's just like a very good boat for crossing the ocean of material life, of material existence. And the guru is like a captain, an experienced captain who can guide us across. The shastra, the directions of shastra, are like the favorable wind. So we have all advantages. But if we don't take advantage of all this, and we fail to cross the ocean of material existence, we are committing suicide. So Krishna is very strong like that. So, but we find both things. For instance, Neha Vikrama Nashosti Pratyavayo Navidyate Swabham Apyasya Dharma Satrayate Mahatobaya. If one that does even a little dharma, he's safe from the greatest fear. So on one hand, we're told, give up all dharma, surrender to me fully. On the other hand, well, a little dharma. Little dharma. Anyway, it's okay. Just do a little. You'll be safe from the greatest fear. It doesn't say that you'll be free from birth and death, but you'll be... So there are both tones going on. There's exclusivist, inclusivist, both within the Bhagavad Gita itself, it appears. So it's a fact that if we perform even a little dharma, we'll be safe from the greatest fear. But a more important fact is that we should utilize this human form of life to fully execute dharma and go back to Godhead. So, what's the conclusion of all this? Well, the conclusion's up to you. In one sense, it's true. The conclusion is given by Krishna. The actual conclusion is given by Krishna. The conclusion is Sarvadhamman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja. But he also gives the individual jiva the independence to choose. So you can make your own truth if you want to. Or at least you can pretend to. But we're all under the control of Krishna. Manushav Partha Sarvasha. Everyone is on Krishna's path. That doesn't mean that you choose to do as you like and it's all the same. Everyone's on Krishna's path. Krishna makes the path. So you can't escape from what Krishna gives. But if you want to say, well, truth for me is sex. No, all right. Okay. What do you want to be, a monkey or a pigeon? Well, you don't even get that choice. So there is a fixed reality. It's not just everything's all the same and do what you like, as you like. That is not the message of Bhagavad Gita. That is not what we are practicing. That is not the truth. How can we say that so confidently? That is the message of Shastra. So we don't want to identify ourselves with a Hinduism that admits atheism. You can be an atheist. It's the whole enterprise is agnostic. Agnostic means that, well, you can't really define truth or reality, and so it's user-defined. That's agnosticism. But there is truth. So our emphasis is to take it very seriously, to take Krishna consciousness very seriously. If we think, well, I chanted Hare Krishna for a few years, but I think I'm going to enjoy myself now. So anyway, swapam apyasya dharmasya apichet sudaracharo. But Krishna doesn't say apichet sudaracharo bhajate mamananya bhak, that okay, you worship me and you be a rascal. That's not what he says. Because if one is actually fully surrendered to Krishna, then shipram hi, what is that? Shipram hi bhavati, what is it? Shipram bhavati dharmatma. He quickly becomes dharmatma, not adharmatma. So, surrender to Krishna. Yes. This is the actual message. We hear Srila Prabhupada, you hear him speaking. It's very different to the tone of these impersonalists, which is very gentle and very... Yes! Ah! Yeah! And you can feel very nice. Srila Prabhupada, no, surrender to Krishna. Don't waste your... Is there, have you heard these Mayavadis, the way they speak? It's very... Srila Prabhupada's tone is very, very different, insistent. Utilize this human form of life. Surrender to Krishna. So, if you do something, even if you offer a roll of toilet paper, which is practically useless to Srila Prabhupada, as the bum in 1965 and 1966 in New York City did, Srila Prabhupada accepted it. He's made a step on the path of self-realization. But that is a step. It's not the whole path. We have to go the whole way, back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna, any question about this, please? Kunjabihari, any question? No? All right. I'm not going to give you any laddus today. I'm not giving anyone any laddus. Because today is Ekadashi, and I didn't get given any laddus without grains. So... sorry. You have to go and take breakfast there.
Buddhists and Jains, they are called nastic because they don't follow any authority. So following that, all other religions, like Abrahamic, they are also called nastic.
Which one did you say? Abrahamic religions. Are they nastic? They have their own scriptures. Srila Prabhupada, when talking about this, he admitted them, their scriptures, as being scripture. But he said, that's there in one purport in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Srila Prabhupada says that there are three scriptures for the mlechas. They're the Old Testament, the New Testament, and the Quran. So, he had... in that sense, he admitted that they're God-given. But they're not for people on a very high... they definitely don't have the same authority as Vedshastra. Once in India, one Indian man, he said, well, in the Bible it says this, and Prabhupada said, why are you going to the Bible? What are you talking about the Bible for? You're here in India. You don't need the Bible. Take the Shastra. In the West, if people brought up the Bible, then Srila Prabhupada would discuss with them. Usually he would bring up the point, thou shalt not kill. In Detroit, one Catholic bishop and a priest came to see Srila Prabhupada, and they spoke about how we have to help the poor. And then Srila Prabhupada countered by saying, well, even your Jesus said that the poor will always be with us. And they were surprised. He knew. He quoted the Bible back at them. And of course, there are theories that Jesus, he learned in India. I feel he's the most overrated person. I gave a lecture on that, right? Jesus, the most overrated person in the world. And there, practically anyone who studied Shastra, any local Brahmana in India has got more knowledge, or at least presented more knowledge than Jesus did. Of course, he sacrificed to preach among such low-class people, so that's great. But as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out, the magnanimity of Vasudeva Datta is far exceeds that of Jesus. Hare Krishna, yes.
பழைய பழைய புதிய பண்ண அப்படின்னா கிடையாது. பழைய பழைய
He wants to know what is the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament.
What is the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament? The Old Testament nearly didn't make it into the Christian Bible. There was a debate about whether to include it or not. It's the book that the Jews, they follow. And then Christianity would have probably been a better religion if the Old Testament wasn't included, because it's from the Old Testament you get this real angry God who's always killing the enemies of the Jews. Although Jesus himself was pretty rough guy. He spoke of always talking about this wailing and gnashing of teeth of the people who don't follow him. The Old Testament is a history of the Jews, a tribe who believed after Moses in one God, are supposed to believe in one God. And the New Testament is the life and teachings of Jesus and the apostles just after Jesus, especially Paul, who completely redefined what Jesus said. So that's a very briefly, that's the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And what consists of the Old Testament and the New Testament, that was arbitrarily decided. And not all Christians agree on that. So if you say, I believe in the Bible, you can tell, well, which Bible? You know, they're different. The Catholic Church has their Bible, and the Protestant Church has their Bible, the Russian Orthodox has their, the Assyrian Church has their Bible, and there's so many different versions of the Bible with different books in it, and so on.
If we debate with the followers of Shankaracharya, and if they
actually, the followers of Shankaracharya shouldn't debate with us. They should own, if they follow Shankara's example, they should debate only with Vedic Brahmins. Follower of Shankara has to be a sannyasi. Sannyasi means who comes from a Brahmin family. And he debated with Vedic scholars. He didn't debate with Buddhists or Jains. He debated with Karmakandiya, Vedic scholars. So actually they shouldn't debate with us. They may say they're a follower of Shankara. If someone tells you he's a follower of Shankara, I tell him to go and take sannyas. But they won't give it unless you're from a Brahmin family. And Shankara Sampradaya, you should know the Shastras. Even to say you're from Brahmin family, that's not enough. You're supposed to know at least one Veda. That's the minimum. You should be able to recite one Veda. That was the standard for a Brahmana until very recently in India. Do you know that? A Brahmana should be able to recite at least one Veda. And therefore there are names like Dvivedi, Trivedi, Chaturvedi, those who know two Vedas, three Vedas, four Vedas. Partak. Partak doesn't mean that he's reading the newspaper. It means he's reciting the Veda. So you could change that statement to, if we debate with people who call themselves followers of Shankara.
If this tell us that you always say that the exception should not be accepted as a rule. Like Prabhupada said so many things which are exception, like you took Pepsi, 7-Up, or yesterday he wrote somewhere, poor should be fed so that he become popular. So,
yesterday he said?
No, yesterday I saw one come. So it is just an exception, it should not be taken as a rule. So in the case of Shankaracharya also, you always quote these things, only that he
Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum. But his teachings are that the Ishvara and Jiva are the same. But that is against the Vedic message. But there are clues which he leaves here and there. Just like in his commentary on the very first verse of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Narayana Paravyaktat, that Narayana is above the Avyakta. So he leaves clues here and there. We accept from the Padma Purana, this Srinu Devi Pravakshami, what is that verse? Mayavada, there's several, Mayavada Masachastram Prachandam Bhodam Uchate, Mayaiva Vehite Devi Kalo Brahmana Rupina. He says, in the Kali Yuga, I will preach the Mayavad, which is Asat Shastra. It is covered Buddhism. So Shiva tells Devi, his wife, that in Kali Yuga I will preach this in the form of a Brahmana. So there are such statements. Srinu Devi Pravakshami. There's another verse also. So they will say this is interpolated. There was a scholar, a Western scholar, who translated the Vedanta Sutra into English with Shankara's commentary. After that, he translated it with Ramanuja's commentary. And in his introductory notes, he said, as a neutral, this was fairly recently, maybe in the last 20 years or so ago, he said, as a neutral observer, it seems to me that Ramanuja's interpretations, they're much more logical and they follow much more naturally from the original spirit of the text. And he was flayed by Shankarite scholars. And he said, well, I'm just giving my opinion, that's all based on what I saw. I'm not a supporter of Shankara or Ramanuja. And then Madhva, he flayed Ramanuja for even including the term Advaita in his philosophy. He insisted on Dvaita. So what to believe? It's all the same. Doesn't matter what you believe. No. That's not a fact. Tarko pratishta shutiyo vibhinna na savrishya yasya matang na bhinnam. Dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gata sapanta. Different people have different ideas. Different shastras appear to say different things. Different people argue in different ways. So we have to follow a Mahajana, who knows what is the essence of dharma. Yudhishthira is advertised as being one who knows the essence of dharma, isn't it? Throughout Mahabharata we have that. So he recognizes Krishna. So does Ahustrang Rishaya Sarve. So do all the rishis. Of course, there are some rishis who may not, but that when we see the self-realized persons, they all accept Krishna as supreme. And we don't include people like Jaimini and Gautama, even Jaimini, those who propound totally materialistic philosophies. We begin with Vedanta. Vedanta means the end of the Veda, the conclusion of the Veda, which is the Upanishads, which means the essence of which everyone will accept, both Mayavadis and Vaishnavas, those who accept the Upanishads, they all accept that we are meant for liberation from this world, attaining Brahman. So all these, any philosophy which gives us, there's no, materialistic philosophy, either enjoy this world or this world is all that there is, we don't even consider that. It's just, it's a very low level. Philosophy begins with Vedanta, actual philosophy. So what is the, what is it? Is it personalist or impersonalist? Or, then comes the question. It's been a long debate. We accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We accept Prabhupada. I want to finish quickly because I'm suffering a certain material misery right now. Give one question and finish.
Nothing.
All right, okay. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.